Monarchy, tyranny, democracy, church, and state. Welcome to the Kennedy Report. I'm Kennedy Hall. We've been talking about liberalism. We've been talking about the errors of liberalism, which are perhaps the most fundamental problems both socially and philosophically in our time. So now that we've sufficiently diagnosed these issues, the ones that plague our societal structures and political conversations, it'd be a good for us to move to a positive direction and establish some truth about how government could operate with the kingship of Christ. Before I continue, please like this video and subscribe to this channel. And if you do enjoy this content, please visit fatima.org and perhaps consider a donation to help us continue these efforts. So first, we need to understand the basic forms of government. It's amazing how much we take for granted our political institutions, just like the idea of freedom of speech we talked about in a previous video. Many Christians fall into the error that we can accept liberal principles of our age just because they work in our favor. Historically, the church, in line with the classical philosophical tradition, has recognized three basic forms of legitimate government, as well as three illegitimate forms, which are fallen versions of those three classic and legitimate forms. So we're going to talk about all three of these in conjunction with one another. The three legitimate forms are monarchy, aristocracy, and what we call polity. And the three fallen forms of those are tyranny, oligarchy, and democracy. I know, democracy is supposed to be our savior with this all lockdown stuff. We need to return to democracy. Well, guess what? You voted in all the people that locked you down. So next time, vote harder, I guess. Anyway, tyranny versus monarchy. What's that about? Well, tyranny is a fallen form of monarchy, wherein a singular leader abuses his power and exhorts his subjects to unreasonable demands. Society is obviously harmed as a result. Monarchy, on the other hand, is the proper form of government where a single ruler is the head. He often comes to his office by inheritance, but this is not necessarily mandatory. Sometimes he can be appointed actually by the people, which happens sometimes. A monarch also generally relies on a wise council of experienced and prudent advisors, though final decisions will be his. So much of our American culture, North American and Canadian, well, to be honest, in most of the West at this point, portrays monarchy as something that is synonymous with tyranny. I imagine many can think of the caricature versions of kings in popular media put forth as bloodthirsty and corrupt rulers. And granted, there have been some very terrible kings, but the way that it's put forth, this king always seems preoccupied with nefarious measures to control the populace, to get more taxes. I mean, you think of the story of Robin Hood. And actually, in fact, just as a side note, Robin Hood is a very truly Christian story, and it's been perverted by the modern Disney version of it. So basically what happens is, in Robin Hood, is the reason why Robin Hood is against the king at the time is because he's a false king. He's not actually anti-monarchy. He's pro the true king who returns from the crusade. So I believe in the original version of the Disney movie, they actually had that true story to it. But this modern Robin Hood we have is very much a liberal Robin Hood, where he's just against power in general. That's not the case. Robin Hood is actually for the traditional Christian monarchy, and he waits for his Christian king, who symbolically is off on crusade, to come back. Anyway, monarchs have been bad at some times in the past, but they've actually been quite the exception. And just for a second here, think about all the sainted monarchs. King Louis, other ones that you can think of that I'm forgetting right now. But there are a lot of actually sainted monarchs. Have there been any sainted presidents? Are we going to expect that Justin Trudeau will be Saint Justin one day in the future? It's not going to happen. If you're looking at the odds, considering how few monarchs there were compared to elected officials, considering how long they reigned, and how many actually elected officials there have been the world over, democracy has been pretty much a wasteland of immorality, whereas we can actually look to the past, and some of these men were so holy that we can actually venerate them as saints. In any case, historically, reigning monarchs were beholden to the laws of the church, and therefore greatly restricted their actions because of the morality that was required of their religion. Also, Catholic kings were expected to rule their people in a paternal manner, concerned, therefore, with the true well-being of their subjects, which ultimately would be the health of their soul, hence his religious role. There was also an inherent check and balance between monarchs and other noblemen. In fact, very often, a count or a baron would have greater financial, military, and natural resources than the actual monarch. Thus, a monarch's power was quite naturally restrained. And in fact, monarchs had to fund their own enterprises. Income tax did not exist until democracy. Think about that. In addition, although it may seem strange to modern sensibility that a ruler inherit an office, we must remember that this resulted in a sort of apprenticeship, where a king's children were raised and trained to rule the people with expertise. We expect a great deal of training and experience from everything else that we want in life. We want our tradesmen to have lots of time on the job. And in fact, if you want to find the best carpenter, find a guy who has a passion for it and grew up with his dad who was a carpenter. And you're going to say, well, it's the family business. In business, when we see family business, we think that is a good thing. We see the same thing about art. You know, so-and-so is a guitar player who's the son of so-and-so, who was a great guitar player. Think about a neurosurgeon. Can you imagine if you needed to get brain surgery and you said, you know what? I don't want to know the guy who grew up with his dad as a doctor. I don't want the guy who has tons of training from the best schools and the best experts and all the tradition of medicine that we can find. I just want a guy that the people really want to work on my brain. It would be absolutely insane. Now, you might argue one way or another, maybe the human brain is more complicated than the society, but if you look at what it means to run a society, it's pretty complicated. It really is a peculiar thing that when it comes to leading a nation, we are more likely to support politicians with celebrity status, irrespective of experience, rather than experts raised in the ancestral family business. With the advent of state churches and Protestantism, some kings and queens became supreme rulers of their lands, demonstrating an unrestrained power that was fertile ground for tyrannical dictatorships. This was called the divine right of kings. That was actually a Protestant concept and not a Catholic one. Unfortunately, it did quite pervert monarchy because the king became sort of like the mini pope of his land, and that led to problems. In our day, tyranny comes in many forms, but strictly speaking, most often comes by way of dictatorship or public health officials. So that's tyranny and monarchy. What about oligarchy and aristocracy? Well, oligarchy is a fallen form of aristocracy where an elite group of individuals abuse their influence, whether monetary or intellectual, as a way of manipulating society in a direction they desire for power and money. I wonder what it would be like to live under something like that. The term aristocracy comes from a Greek word, which is, forgive me if you're a Greek speaker, I believe it's pronounced aristoi. This denotes a class of men which correspond to the English term of something like nobility. Our popular discourse has largely confused the term aristocracy with something like bourgeoisie, but that's actually a different term. This is a hangover of sort of French revolutionary Marxist stuff. When in reality, a true aristoi basically just means a proven man of wisdom and commendable status, competent enough to help the community. If you want to know whether or not you actually want to have an aristocracy, I suggest look at what happens in fictional tales about times of apocalypse. Consistent in all those stories is when the government shuts down, the police shut down, there's a plague or zombies or whatever the thing happens to be. There's always this going back and trying to find the older men of the community who have their stuff together and are able to lead you. People naturally fall into this because we know somebody who's competent in many areas, that guy should be in charge. I mean, it's pretty simple. In well-functioning societies of the past, the aristocracy played a role in bringing the regional needs of their communities to the headship of the government. As I mentioned about monarchy, the noblemen often had more resources at their disposal than the actual monarch. Furthermore, when aristocracy functions well, it helps to act as a protective measure against the temptation for a king to act as a tyrant against the people under the regional jurisdiction of the aristocrat. When aristocracy devolves into oligarchy, we unfortunately see our elite classes acting against the well-being of the common person, enforcing greater tyranny on behalf of the head of state, like today with big pharma, big business, and big oil. The woman, I believe, who is in charge of Toronto Public Health, I think she got it was either her or the one in charge of Ottawa, but one of them got a $100,000 raise last year. $100,000 raise to lockdown society. And in fact, if you ask the people, why aren't the mayors and the premiers and the governors doing more? Well, they don't have as much power as the oligarchy that's in charge of their people. We have a fallen form of aristocracy. So what about democracy and polity? Well, democracy is actually the fallen form of polity. And I'm going to pause there for a second. Again, democracy is like a golden calf of our society. We think we have this beautiful democratic republic or the democratic parliamentary system. But you have to understand, pure democracy is actually evil. Because pure democracy means majority rule. That means if 70% of people think that it's okay for abortion, then we're going to have abortion. That means if 70% of people think that it's okay to inflict unjust penalties on innocent people, then that's democratic. In fact, I remember years ago when Stephen Harper was the Prime Minister of Canada, for those who don't know, he was a Conservative Prime Minister, there was a man who, he painted an expletive. It was a swear word on the back of his car, and it said something Harper, I'll leave it at that. And I remember the police actually told him he couldn't do that because it was sort of public obscenity or something like that, which was fine because you don't want children reading those sorts of things. But there was an interview with this guy who was so intelligent in his way of criticizing the Prime Minister, and he said something like, this is nonsense. This is against democracy. Well, he had the popular understanding of democracy, which basically meant as long as I want it, it should be. Well, that's no different than a toddler. So, democracy is a fallen form of polity, as the individual voter becomes the authority over state affairs by aligning themselves with like-minded groups that decide in societal manners, irrespective of morals and customs, as I've said. It might come as a surprise, because, as I said, many of us see democracy as this wonderful thing, but it's actually a negative process. We've been inundated for centuries with the messages about the glory of the democratic process, but as I said, it's not the way that we think. What we call democracy, when we see it working well, we should actually be using the word polity. As I go back to aristocracy and monarchy, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be the involvement of people on the smallest level. That's a big part. That's called subsidiarity. But in classical terms, what we think of as a well-functioning democracy is actually termed as polity. That describes the correct participation of the common person. In a well-functioning society, even in monarchies, the people would act as a polity in governmental affairs. A simple example of good participation on behalf of the polity would be something like town hall gatherings. And in fact, in some places in the northeastern United States, in New England, they still have town hall meetings that are actually a part of their democratic process. But technically speaking, that's the involvement of the polity. It's not just voting, it's they actually get together to make decisions. Since people who live in a community are best suited to see the needs of their community, it only makes sense that they would have a say in how that community should operate at a local level. Even in good monarchies of the past, the polity was respected and made most local or regional decisions for themselves, only deferring to higher levels of authority for statewide or nationwide concerns, usually things like famine, national defense, or infrastructure. I mean, you know, you can't really vote on how should you have your railway going from one coast of your nation to the other. That's going to be a national thing, and that's where you have national involvement. Modern-day democracy, however, has confused the proper involvement of the polity in local affairs with an inability to directly influence national leadership in a way that forces people to live and act in ways against conscience and custom. Think about it for a second. When you vote for somebody to go to parliament or to the legislature, well, basically what you're saying is, I want this person to go and make all my decisions for me. That's the opposite of polity. That's the opposite of what most people think is democracy. I mean, you're saying, so-and-so, I want you to go think for me because I agree with how you think. Well, in that system, if you lose, you send somebody who you think is going to make your life worse because they just want more votes. It's a very flawed system. So, what would a government with the kingship of Christ actually look like? Well, thankfully, we can look to the great ages of faith to see what these cultures would look like. For centuries, Christian civilization existed under confessional states, where societies where Christ and the Catholic faith were legally recognized by the state as having official primacy. In concrete history, most of these states were monarchical. They were governed by a king or an emperor or slight variations thereof. There have been some Republican heroes. Gabriel Garcia Moreno, he was the Republican, not Republican like Republican Party, but as a republic, he was the leader of Ecuador for a time. But he actually was looking to install the monarchy, and he is a blessed, if I'm not mistaken, so he was a very saintly man. The stereotypical monarchy that employs the divine right of kings, as I said, though, is a fallen version that we see now in our popular culture, and that's a Protestant invention which has clouded our view of monarchy. Most of these Catholic monarchical states of the past, if not all, they all functioned as mixed regimes. So think about these three legitimate forms of monarchy, aristocracy, and polity. There was always a heavy influence of all of these in these so-called monarchies of the past. Mixed regimes are structures wherein we find a balance between these three styles of government. For example, we see a king who acts as a monarch, lords or noblemen who fulfill the role of the aristocracy, and knowledgeable commoners who constitute a well-respected and experienced polity. Various nations place greater weight on one level or the other, and that could be for the needs of your country. That can be geographical, that can be by custom. But a balance of power between complementary institutions was always common. In fact, when you look back on the great kings and queens of the past, you will find that they actually didn't do a whole lot. And that's why they were so great. And when you get rid of the need for elections, you get rid of this need for a cultural revolution every 4 years. Is it not exhausting? Every 4 years or 5 years, you know, depending on where you live, it basically seems like if we don't get our guy, we're all going to hell in a handbasket. And that's what it feels like. That's no way to live. If you have one head who has restrained powers, you have a balance of powers at different levels, you take care of your business, you work it out amongst your community for things that are a little bit above your pay grade, you rely on somebody with an expertise, and for things that are of national concern, the king rarely steps in. That's the way it should be. Consider, for example, France in the 13th century. The eldest daughter of the church was ruled by King Saint Louis IX, arguably the greatest and holiest monarch we've ever seen. Under a feudal system, various counts, barons, and dukes ruled over certain areas and cooperated with the king in furthering the interests of France and the church. Guilds, merchants, university leaders, village councils, and monasteries all helped to form a robust, informed, and involved polity. That is not to say the 13th century in France was a perfect system, unlike our perfect system, of course. However, this was a golden age for France, and many historians consider it one of the heights of Christendom. Now, must a Christian state be a monarchy? Technically speaking, no. And to be honest, if I look around at society right now, we are light years ahead of any sort of Christian monarchy. Perhaps it's an unthinkable thing that could happen without some divine intervention. A Christian confessional state does not technically have to be a monarchy, but practically speaking, they always have been. There have been some exceptions, like the historical city-state of Venice that functioned as a republic. But these societies still had a monarchical trajectory to them because they functioned under a legitimate aristocracy, and they would give their allegiance to the Holy See, which functions like a monarchy, if you think about it. So, the church herself is set up in that way, but again, the church, a perfect society, is also a mixed regime going down from the Pope to the layperson. In any case, the monarchical element is quite helpful. The monarch is properly understood to have a certain paternal role over the society, and if I may, I think that's one of the reasons why the left-wing anti-Catholic forces really hate this idea of patriarchy. The king is the father of the country. And in fact, think about it. To be a patriot means to honor your patria, which means to honor your fatherland. The best way you can be a patriot is to be a faithful Christian, to give glory and honor to God, who is the father of all of our patria. This is why I think the left and the Marxists really hate this term patria, or this term patriarchy. But we needn't shy away from this idea of a king being a father figure, because that's how it's always been when it functioned properly. This means that the king must be concerned with the holistic well-being of his subjects. Contrast this with the modern democratically elected official who is primarily concerned with appealing to a specific base of people for moneyed interests in the hopes they will secure his re-election. That's really all it's about nowadays. We have not progressed. In fact, we've digressed completely. Monarchs have certainly failed at times. Yet, to be fair, compare the litany, as I said, of canonized saints to Joe Biden. Need I say more? Anyway, interestingly, in a classic Catholic monarchy, kings and queens were, practically speaking, quite restrained in how they used their power. The principle of subsidiarity, which means the lowest level handling affairs as long as it can, was correctly employed as regional communities handled the majority of their own affairs. Furthermore, on a practical level, it makes sense that monarchy would be a good system for national rule. Just like a family business, royal families often act like artisans who pass on that family trade through their generations. It really is a peculiar thing that such a great emphasis is placed on the democratic ideal that any man can be the head of state. I doubt anyone would choose to have an unrestrained, popularly elected man perform some sort of surgery, as I said, but we just keep pushing this idea in our governments. It makes no sense. Unfortunately, in our societies, we've eschewed the rightly ordered concept of monarchical families. We have seen the rise of oligarchical families like the Kennedy family in the United States, the Trudeau family in Canada. These families seemingly ape royal families of the past, but in a way that foments partisan division as they advocate for very non-Catholic positions. Now, it is unlikely, as I said, and it will be hard to see how we could regain any of this sort of Catholic government in today's society. So we must work hard at our local levels. Use the institutions that we have for as long as we have them, as long as we can do so morally, and pray for the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Because if I think about that for a second here, how did the communist revolution start in Russia? Well, it started by killing the king. Just like the French Revolution started in France, it started by killing the king. Just the same spirit as the American Revolution was separate ourselves from the king. Well, if we have this great emphasis on killing the king and separating ourselves from the king, then how long before we kill the idea of the King of Kings in our soul or separate ourselves from him through mortal sin? In any case, pray for the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, as the errors of Russia are inherent in this confused understanding of government that we have in our society today. If you have liked this video, please subscribe to the channel, go to Fatima.org, and if you would, consider a donation to help us continue with these efforts and see what we have going on to help spread the faith and the message of Fatima. Thank you. I'm Kennedy Hall. This has been the Kennedy Report. Until next time, God bless.